Well, hello, Wilder, who had a cold last week. Are you better?
No, it's the forever cold, Hollister.
Okay.
I'm just forever sneezing and sniffling.
Okay, well, we're just going to have to do some sort of movie on it or something. Maybe a documentary on everybody getting colds now that COVID has left us, our immune systems totally compromised. So,
as long as it's only 5 minutes. Otherwise, I think that's going to be like the worst documentary of all time, but that's fine.
Okay. Well, I was thinking 30 seconds maybe, but okay.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, well, you got a compliment from Christian from Seattle on last week. Wilder, hate to say it, but you should be sick more often. Brilliant commentary last week around No Sudden Move. I don't know what to tell you. I think...
Is that a compliment? I think that's a backhanded compliment.
Well, whatever it is, Christian, thank you for taking the time to write in. And then I got one that I'm sure is not a compliment. So I thought I would read both of us where we can sort of check this out. So this is from Rosie. And I'm not sure, but Rosie O'Donnell follows me because we did a thing together a couple of years ago. I don't think it's her, but you never know. Hollister, doesn't surprise me that you love Cruella de Vil. Anyone whose favorite movie is Silence of the Lambs, well, that says it all. Can't wait to see what you come up with next. I'm pleased you are doing regular podcasts again. I never miss one of them. Not sure what that says about me. So thank you, everyone. We really do appreciate when you take time to let us know you're listening. And our numbers had fallen off because the last couple of years I wasn't really podcasting. Once O'Toole passed away, I sort of took a sabbatical, maybe, if you will. And I'm so grateful to you, Liz, to have you on here because it's made me really enjoy doing it again. So that's why.
Well, I'm grateful that you've got me, and I hope O'Toole is smiling down on us, and yes. I'm doing her at least a little bit of justice. I can't imagine I can ever fill her shoes.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that. Anyway, moving right along, the nominations for the Emmys were announced this week.
Yeah.
I have so many things to say, but interesting to note a couple of stats I'm going to put out there, and I know you're going to want to comment on some of them. HBO and HBO Max combined to take in a leading 130 total nominations.
Holy good for them.
You know, followed closely behind by Netflix with 129. But when you look at the size of Netflix versus HBO, I don't know. Disney Plus had a significant jump from last year with 71 nominations in its second year of eligibility. So any comments on that?
I think the fact that Disney Plus is getting Emmy nominations is a really big deal. They said a long time ago that they were not in it for the awards. I think that's probably changing now.
Yeah. Well, 24 of those awards were for The Mandalorian, and that tied with WandaVision, which was, the Marvel piece. And Hulu's Handmaid's Tale had 21. What do you say? I mean, Mandalorian is sort of a sci-fi.
I mean, it's Star Wars. It is Star Wars. I watched the show. I really enjoyed it. It depends on where you're getting the nominations. These are tech awards. These are art awards. These aren't necessarily.
That's
the,
true. That's true.
But The Mandalorian is up for, best,
yep.
best
yep.
series. And
yep.
it's not up for best actor, which I think is interesting because I got to say, I think Pedro Pascal does a hell of a job carrying that show when you never see his face.
Yeah.
But I thought WandaVision, aside from the finale, and we can talk about this, I don't know if you've watched it, but WandaVision I thought was fantastic. And they took the opportunity to dive in on a real character level. Yeah, they kept all the Marvel stuff, but this was a show about grief. And they weren't afraid of that. And I thought that was really impressive.
Yep. Well, it's interesting because, I'm not an award show fan in general. And I always think that the award shows should be valued based on a series of degree of difficulty, stuff like that. Because, for example, in the lead actress in a drama series, you've got Olivia Colman for The Crown versus Elizabeth Moss for The Handmaid's Tale. Now, the degree of difficulty, no offense, Olivia, I'm sure you're a fabulous actor and I enjoy The Crown. Olivia Colman does not have the degree of difficulty in the acting skills necessary to do that series that Elizabeth Moss does. It's just not the same.
Well, I wouldn't say that she doesn't have the acting skills necessary because I think she certainly does. I think it's a different kind of show, right? They're just very different. And I would say that for Elizabeth Moss, this year was very different for her for The Handmaid's Tale.
I thought the physicality that was necessary for this year was, well, it's been difficult every year, but I think the overall needs, the acting needs for the Handmaid's Tales part that Elizabeth Moss is playing is just not comparable to pretty much anybody else that's up here against her.
I don't know that that's true, because Olivia Colman's playing the queen, and I can't think of a more mysterious real life person that's still alive today. We don't know anything about the queen, right? We just know what she shows us, and having to embody that and give that a personality and a life and a sympathy to one of the most wealthy women in the world. I think she did a great job. I think Emma Corrin also did a great job with Diana, though Diana has a lot more levels to play with.
Oh, I think Diana was a harder role than the queen. I mean, in other words, once Olivia gets her accent, her facial expressions, there's only three facial expressions for the queen.
But that's what I think is hard about it, is like you don't have range in playing the queen, right? You have to make those things we know about the queen work for 10 episodes.
Well, I'm going to go with Elizabeth Moss, and I have not pushed her in any of the other years. She's been up pretty much every year since it came out. But this year, compared to who she's up against, I think she absolutely deserves it, you know?
I mean, I will say I didn't watch Pose. I only watched a couple of episodes of Lovecraft Country, though I do think Journey Smollett is great. And that show was really interesting and pushed a lot of boundaries. And I applaud them for what they were trying to do.
I haven't watched it. Should we be reviewing that? The Lovecraft
Country, I think, got canceled, unfortunately. Uh-huh. It's a really interesting take on H.P. Lovecraft, who was a racist, and it kind of takes his work, puts it into 1950s America, and it explores Black lives through it. And she's fantastic in it.
Okay.
And so I think Courtney B. Vance is in it for like a hot second. He's great. The whole cast is really great, but it is, I mean, it's weird. You've got like Cthulhu stuff happening in the same world as our world. And it's very interesting.
Well, and congrats to Hugh Grant, who's had a career that has never had standout performances that were even under consideration. And he's up for The Undoing.
But nothing else is.
Well, that's true. And also, it was surprising to me that Nicole Kidman didn't get up for lead actress in her role, because I thought she was fantastic.
That's because that show is not good.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm sorry, but the roles are... Anyway, congrats, Hugh. Even though I think Lin-Manuel Miranda, who the darling of everybody's world, probably walk away with
what that. Is with that? What's with all the Hamilton nominations?
I don't know.
It's so weird.
I know. They love him. We reviewed it, and I think we stand by what we said. Anyway, okay, now here's a couple things that are interesting. I'm going to ask you either ors. You ready? Because there's so many on the awards. I've never seen this many where, for example, on supporting actress in a drama series, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are from The Handmaid's Tale. And then The Crown has 3. And then there's another Lovecraft Country stuck in there. But I'm going to ask you a couple either ors in supporting actress category in a drama series. Ready?
Okay.
Anne Dowd in The Handmaid's Tale or Yvonne Strahovski in The Handmaid's Tale?
I think this year I got to go with Yvonne. Normally I would say Anne, but they didn't give her the material this year.
Which partly was because of the COVID thing. They had to film everybody separately because they couldn't be in the same place.
Yeah, I don't think it's her fault. I think she's great. I just don't think she had as much material to work with this year.
Okay, now in the supporting actress in a limited series or movie, I'm going to give you a couple of either ors. For Mayor of Easttown, which God knows, I think they were amazing in so many of those places. But would you go with Julianne Nicholson or Jean Smart?
I gotta give it to Julianne.
I knew you were gonna say that, and I'm not sure. You know, Jean Smart is older. She's been around longer. I think people will want to celebrate her overall career, which makes them vote sometimes in that way. I think she's gonna take it. I think Jean Smart.
But I think when you're talking, going by your own rating system, I think Hollister, you've got to give it to Julianne. Her role was so much harder.
I couldn't agree more, but I'm just saying, I knew you'd say that, and I don't disagree with you, but I'm not sure she'll be able to pull it off. So we'll have to keep a little bit of an eye on that for sure.
All right.
And then also, The Queen's Gambit, I got to say, okay, you've got Kate Winslet in Mare of Easttown. We've got Anya Taylor-Joy, The Queen's Gambit. Which one would you go with?
Kate.
I knew you were going to say that. Okay, I'm going to go with Anya.
Really?
Yeah, I am. Look, I think Kate was exceptional. I just feel like Anya, also it's not fair because she's had 3 days off in 3 years. She went from one role in a Jane Austen film and the next day she was shooting The Queen's Gambit. And I think The Queen's Gambit had a degree of difficulty that was larger than Mare.
I also wouldn't choose either of them for this category though.
Really? Who would you choose?
I would choose Michaela Cole.
I knew you were going to say that.
Have you watched I May Destroy You?
I have not.
You have to watch it. You have to.
Okay.
It's unbelievable.
All right. It is. Come on it.
You can't talk about this without having watched it.
Maybe we should review it. Are you interested?
I think we're way behind the ball on that.
Yeah. Well, no, now that it's coming out for an Emmy, people will revisit it.
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe we could just do some short reviews on Emmy things that you should see if you can. So
it's unbelievable.
Maybe we'll do that. Okay. All right. What else? Anything else from the Emmys you want to talk about?
I am very excited for Ted Lasso that they got so many Emmy nods. I think Jason Sudeikis probably takes lead actor this year in a comedy.
Wow.
Which I think he's as surprised as anyone that's happening. But I love that show. And I think especially in a year of insane darkness, it gave us a nice reprieve. I love that Underground Railroad is up for limited series. I don't know what to call on that.
You know, in the end, I didn't get through the whole thing. You did, right?
I haven't watched the whole thing yet. You have to parse it out. So I'm making my way through it. It's too hard. You can't binge that one.
Well, that's the parsing out the way I do is, let's say I buy mango chutney. And 2 years later, I'm still parsing out the small jar of mango chutney that I bought. It's like, I don't know that I'll ever finish it, you know?
But does that diminish how good it is?
In certain places, yeah. No, it doesn't. You're right. You're right. You're right. In curry, we're making curry sauce with mango chutney from Miss Ina Garten. Okay. I know. There you go, right? All right. We're going to move on to our feature this week, Black Widow. Okay.
Wait, before we jump into this, I have a question for you.
Yeah. Go
for it. How many Marvel movies have you seen?
Well, I'm not even sure because I'm not sure I know which ones are Marvel movies.
Oh, well, there we go. That sets the tone for this whole conversation.
But it's like Spider-Man Marvel?
Technically, yeah.
Okay, so I've seen two or three Spider-Mans. I saw the Marvel movie where all the Marvel stars came together to fight evil, which came out like...
Okay, that's a couple of them. Is that Avengers? Is that Endgame?
I don't know. It was the last one. I think Endgame.
Was there a big purple guy in it?
I don't really. They're all many colors. I can tell you many colors. So I get that the Marvel brand has a reach that's larger than life. I get that. I get it. Okay. And I get that this is a big deal, that this is the first Marvel movie that Scarlett Johansson, who's pushed for this for years, now that I've read a little bit about it, she's pushed to have this done for years. I get this is a big deal for women, but before we even get into that, we've got to describe it a little bit. So, you know what? It's so complicated. By the way, I thought I should watch it twice because I had no idea what was going on the first hour. But then I decided I don't want to watch it twice. And I refuse to watch it twice because it's not written in a way that I can figure out what it's about. So at any rate, I didn't watch it twice. You're going to have to give us a little bit of the synopsis, which I normally do. But you know what, Wilder? I can't do it. So you go for it.
All right. So for those of you who are Marvel fans, you've been waiting for this movie for a long time. For those of you who are not, you probably have zero idea what's going on. Black Widow is an Avenger. She is a big superhero. She's part of the big team. She's the only woman on the team. She's an ex-Soviet spy. She went rogue and defected to the United States. This is the story. I thought this was actually going to be her origin story. Instead, they kind of twisted it a little bit and they give you, this is where she is on the 2 years after Civil War, which is a big Marvel movie when some of our heroes are on the run. She meets up with her long lost sister, who is not her blood sister, but is her Soviet sister. And they team up to take down the Red Room, which is the greatest spy factory in Russian history. They churn out female spies who are all indoctrinated into the Soviet way of life, whether by mental conditioning, which was Black Widow's history, or by chemical redesign of their brain, which was her younger sister's journey. So this is their opportunity to team up and take down Russian spycraft in the Marvel Universe.
Which, by the way, if I had heard that description before I started watching, I'm sure I would have enjoyed it 10 times more. But if you don't know that, and I'm so sad I didn't have you tell me what it was about beforehand, because if you don't know that, it's really hard to decipher that's what's happening. Like, this opening scene's very exciting, but we have no idea. I have no idea why they're running. I don't get it. It's so alien to, you know, who are they running from? Are they running from Americans? Are they running from aliens? Who are they running from? It's so hard to play catch up when you don't understand the backstory around it. So I think you should have been a voiceover.
Well, Hollister, I gotta tell you, there's how many Marvel movies? I mean, there's over 30 Marvel movies and TV shows now at this point. And so if this is your entrance point, I would have told you, you need to watch a couple of previous films to appreciate where Black Widow is on her journey now. Because this is, I mean, as my fiance said, this should have, the intro to this movie should have been previously in the Marvel Universe.
You know, in a long, long ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Yes. Yeah. You know, it would have been helpful, because after you've given me that, I'm like, oh. All right, but wait, we have to start out with some of the dialogue. Okay. Now, you're granted, you're right. I have not seen 28 Marvel movies or however many are out there. But let me just read off this dialogue a little bit for you, and then you're going to have to defend it if you possibly can. Natasha says, here's what's going to happen. Melina says, Natasha, don't slouch. Natasha, I'm not slouching. Melina, you're going to get a back hunch. Alexia, listen to your mother. Natasha, oh my God, this. Alexia, up, up. Natasha, all right, enough, all of you. Yelena, I didn't say anything. That's not fair. Hello? What Marvel movie has dialogue like that when there's a male lead?
All of them. All of them have scenes like this. This is what makes the Marvel movies great, is that, so first of all, context, right? Context is king. The context of this scene is it's a throwback to when this whole group of people were pretending they were a sleeper cell, right? I apologize. I'm giving a little bit of a spoiler. It's the first 5 minutes of the movie, but you already said they're on the run, right? That you've got this, what you think is a quintessential American family in 1995 in Ohio. They've got two daughters, but you can tell that something's off, right? The older daughter doesn't seem to feel like what's happening around her is real. They don't seem like a normal family. There's clearly secrets. We're not sure what's going on. Dad comes home and he says, we've got an hour and we got to go. Right. And if you know Black Widow, if you know anything about this character, you know that this is a Russian sleeper cell in America and they've got to get the hell out of America. So you obviously didn't have that experience. So all of this is chaos to you. You have no idea what's going on.
Well, when they landed in Cuba, I sort of thought, oh, man. But, you know, it's very hard to follow if you don't have backstory. It is.
Right. And so my suggestion would be, here's a couple of movies that you should probably go take a look at before you jump into
Black Widow. By the way, do not waste your time sending me to watch movies that you know I'm not going to watch.
I know. But these Marvel movies are far better than I think a lot of people give them credit for. Especially if you followed these movies and you got to Endgame and you got to the end of Endgame without shedding a tear, I would be baffled, because they have built up the lives of these characters. You love these characters. And with Black Widow, especially, what I love about Black Widow is Black Widow is the only non-superhero, except for Hawkeye, who's her best friend, who's the guy with the bow. They're the only ones that don't have superpowers on the team. They're people. They are regular people who are so well trained that they can keep up with the Avengers. They can keep up with the God of Thunder. They can keep up with the super soldier Captain America, and they can keep up with Iron Man. And that's what I love about Black Widow. She's the only woman on the team and she doesn't have any superpowers. She's just a badass.
And well, not only that, she does keep up with them. It's true. But I did fast forward through some of the scenes of violence, I like to call them. I call them SOV, scenes of violence. Is this necessary? Does this push the story forward? What is the point of this?
Like which ones?
All of them?
Oh, So you are not, obviously not the target audience for these movies.
By the way, let's really talk about this. Who is the target audience?
18 to 35 year olds for sure. Okay. And then my father, who grew up on all of these comic books his entire life. I mean, I will tell you, we have a storage unit that is essentially for my father's comic books. we have a 10 by 10 storage unit that we went to go clean out. And the number of boxes that we pulled out that were just comic books, you all would be astounded.
I hope you didn't throw them away, because it's my understanding they're worth something now.
Oh, did he tell you that story?
No, he didn't. Well, no, because actually I have not seen Elizabeth's father since we graduated in June of 1971. And we were supposed to have lunch last weekend, and I'm the one who messed it up, and he hasn't spoken to me since, but he'll come back to me, I know.
He will.
Okay.
Yeah. But essentially, when my father was about 18, he went off to college, and my grandmother cleaned out his room and threw away a number one edition of Spider-Man, which would be worth so much money today. Unbelievable.
Well, I'm sure that's not the only thing she did.
Yeah, she threw away a lot of things. But so we've got an insane amount of comic books, and there's a huge amount of people who are massive fans of these, but these are wide audience. These are big tentpole movies. These are now family movies. And I know that there's an ungodly amount of violence in it. We can talk
there
about
is.
That.
And by the way, I'm not sure this should be a family movie.
I do think this one is a bit more violent. There's definitely a lot more bad language in it than other Marvel movies, but you're right. I mean, there is an insane amount of violence in it.
And by the way, as violence escalates in this country over and over again, I can't help but wonder, is this a good thing for us to be putting into the minds and hearts of children? I don't think so.
Again, you're talking about this without having the context of the background. If you're talking about a Captain America movie, those movies are all about honor and responsibility and standing up for those you love. And Iron Man's not my favorite, but the whole point of the first Iron Man movie is that he discovers that his weapons are being used for things he would never approve of. So he changes his entire business model so that they're not making weapons anymore. That's what these movies are supposed to be.
Well, and in the middle of that message, which is subliminally laid out, is a million scenes of violence. You can couch it a little bit, but here's the one thing I do want to talk about is Scarlett Johansson's performance.
Oh, I want to talk about
Florence Pugh's. Oh my God. Okay, well, both. Well, now, by the way, Lauren Pugh, once they saw how good she was going to be, they changed the script so that it could accommodate her to make her the star for the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's so good.
She is. But also, I don't know her as well as I know Scarlett Johansson on the screen. And so for me, I recognize why Scarlett took this role. This is no easy. This is a badass role. It's a badass role to play. The physicality of it. You know, I remember Jennifer Lawrence in The Hunger Games being interviewed afterward. And she said, what you don't realize about The Hunger Games is in the first Hunger Games, she said, I was running 80% of the time. And not only that, I was running through sets where literally fire was coming out of the ground. If I made a mistake, it was not going to be pretty. And she said she got really, really toned and physically fit. Because when you have to run through fire 25 takes, she said, it's exhausting. And I can't even, you know, these roles that these women are stepping into, I give it to her. Good job, all of you. Well done. Don't you think?
Yeah. And I'll be honest that I wasn't a huge Scarlett Johansson fan before the Marvel movies. I kind of thought she was a little boring.
You know what? I don't know, boring or just it was so predictable. Whatever she did, there was never an element of surprise.
Yeah. And to me,
maybe a little bit. Yeah. Well, it is boring. And maybe a little bit in Woody Allen, she was able to stand out a little bit. But in general, I think that's probably her personality.
Well, I don't know that that's her personality at all, but I do know that the Black Widow character, she's surprising in it. They've written it, you know, Black Widow has to be a blank slate, right? She can be anyone. She can do anything. And she's a spy. And so she has to fill whatever role comes her way. But they have these wonderful moments that she just gets this comedy in one line. And she's so straight-faced about it. She's so muted in her delivery that you have to really pay attention to all of
it.
Right. And I don't think that's actually really easy to do. Just like we were talking about Olivia Colman, I actually think that's really hard to do when you want to infuse a character with personality and be interesting to watch and have people walk away with something from your character. When you're forced to really be that blank slate, I don't think that's an easy role to play.
No, I agree.
In addition to the physicality. And I think Florence Pugh takes most of the comedy in this. They're sisters and they're both spies and they're both soldiers. And Florence Pugh has this running gag about talking about what a poser Black Widow is and how she always lands in a certain way and then flicks her head over and with the hair and everything. And she's like, you're such a poser. Like that can't be comfortable. And you see her, Florence Pugh gets her opportunity to kind of try to do that pose. And she's like, oh, this is, and she's just so good about it.
You'll all remember that we saw Florence Pugh as Amy in Little Women, and they actually held off taping and shooting Little Women because they were waiting for her to be able to come on set. That's how much they wanted her to play Amy. And again, she's got a little bit of that badasser in her in Little Women too. I think she brought a whole new dimension to Amy that had not been seen before, including in the book. And so now she comes in, and what's funny is, guess who else was considered for the role in Black Widow?
I have no idea who.
Okay, Emma Watson.
That's different.
Saoirse Ronan, Alice Englert, and Dar Zazofsky. Now, Dar Zazofsky, they wanted her, and she wasn't available, so they went with Florence. But what's funny is Emma Watson.
Oh, thank God.
I know. Well, Emma Watson was in Little Women. It's just funny because
I don't think Emma's half the actor that Florence is.
You don't? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I love her and I love what she stands for, but I think she plays herself in everything.
Uh-huh.
And I'll never forgive Disney for casting her as Belle when she can't sing, but that's a personal situation over here.
Well, you know what? You can be angry and bitter and just try to move beyond it in your later life when you realize that there are bigger things to be upset about. But she does a great job. And also, there's something about the two of them, too.
Scarlett, they're sisters. Yeah. They feel like sisters.
And when I looked at Emma Watson in that role, I didn't see it. And so I really feel that the choice was, although that was made for them, I think the choice was well done.
The chemistry is undeniable. But yeah. I also think we need to talk about Kate Shortland as the director. And this is interesting. And did you see, you probably didn't, but did you see Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn movie?
No.
Okay. it's not very good. It's DC, and DC is desperately trying to catch up to Marvel, and they're just missing at every turn, unfortunately. I'm hoping that the new Flash movie will bring them up to speed. But they had a female director on Birds of Prey. It was very important to them. And what I do like about DC is that they did Wonder Woman, which was the first female superhero movie that we had that was singularly a woman. They also did Birds of Prey, which is Harley Quinn's movie. And so they are on the forefront when it comes to women starring in these movies. They had a female director on this, on Harley Quinn, and I never really appreciated how important and how difficult it is to capture the action in these movies.
Yeah.
The fight scenes, the choreography, how it's a dance, right?
And,
it's a
and dance. Expensive, I might add, to try to have to do it more than one time, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on the scene and it depends on how many explosions there are and what you're blowing up, but
there's not a lot of room for learning curves.
No.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And sure, I'm sure you're using stunt people and what have you. But when you watch Harley Quinn, those scenes feel slow. When you've come out of the Marvel camp of watching these movies, of how quickly these fight scenes go, how fast they're exchanging punches and kicks and they're moving across the scenery, it's beautiful. It's hard to recognize because you're so engrossed in what's happening. But when I stepped back and I watched Harley Quinn, I was like, oh, wow, this is a skill set and it's not in this movie. And when I watched Black Widow, Kate Shortland did it and she did it well. And there's a character in this movie that is our primary antagonist that you're not sure who it is, but their fighting styles, they are a perfect mimic. And when they're fighting someone, they can recreate what that person is doing. And so it makes fighting them impossible, right? Because they can anticipate everything you're going to do. And watching that, it's like watching someone fight a mirror. Mm-hmm. And that Kate was able to capture that in a way that we could appreciate it as an audience, I think is really impressive.
Well, not only that, you know, she's treading new ground.
Yeah.
She's got to get it right because we need her to get it right.
Yeah. And she did a great job with this.
Exactly. And so not only would she have that pressure, but the pressure of everything else. So I agree. Well done. Well done. Well done. You would clearly recommend this movie to everybody.
I would recommend this movie to people who are Marvel fans. If you're not a Marvel fan, I would say if you're interested in getting into the Marvel universe, you should do some background homework. You should probably go watch The Avengers, if nothing else, to at least get introduced. Black Widow is first seen in Iron Man 2, which is not a very good movie, but she's very good in it. So I would say go watch The Avengers to at least get up to speed on who Black Widow is and where she came from, so you can have some kind of appreciation going into this film.
Or you could maybe watch a couple of them just to find out if you are a Marvel fan, because if you weren't a comic, you know, I didn't know, maybe I could be one now that you've explained it to me in a better way. But a couple things too I want to run by you. So Black Widow's just entered the second weekend at the box office. We're taping on Sunday and we'll be launching this podcast probably tomorrow, Tuesday. So 58% of the ticket buyers who went out and saw the movie were men.
Awesome. I think that's great.
Well, that leaves a roughly 60-40 split, right, between men and women who decide, you know, decided to take it on. Okay, now, interesting, based on past reports of superhero movies, the gender demographics for Black Widow are pretty much in line with what we knew, except for Wonder Woman, which had 52% of the women, 52% of the people going to see Wonder Woman were women. Now, but what it's not accounting for, and I think that number is skewed because of it, you could go to the movies and see Black Widow, or you could watch it on streaming. I had to sign up for Disney and then pay $29 for this film, which a lot of money, you know? Okay, but $60 million came in the first 2 weeks on Disney for the film. So that sort of skews it too. Like, we don't know how much of the $62 million was based on male or female viewers.
Well, and you also don't know how many people are watching it at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, my fiance and I watched it together.
For $29, I would have invited all my friends over. I had no idea it was going to be that much.
That's the point, though, is, you know, it's $30, but how many people can you cram into your living room? And, you know, not to brag, but we have a 75-inch television screen. So we don't need to go to the movie, right? Like, we're happy to sit in our living room with our awesome sound system and our great, huge television screen.
You don't have the popcorn or peanut chews that a movie theater has.
I can make all of those. That's really not that hard.
It's not quite the same, but anyway.
It's not the same. Uh-huh. I will say that. I do miss going to the theater, but you're all aware of what a terrible immune system I have. I'm not in a rush to get back out into population that way. But yeah, this is a movie I would have wanted to see in a Dolby Atmos theater for
sure. Well, and the other thing that has to be said is Disney's the first of the streaming people to launch the film on screen in movie theaters on the same exact day as they streamed it on their streaming on television. Okay, and they took a risk to do it. They have a lot of money plowed into this, a lot of press, they have a lot invested, and boy, did it pay off.
Because but that's the power of these Marvel movies.
Right. Well, is it the power of the Marvel movie, or does it mean that right now, what does that mean to AMC? Some are saying it could be the death of AMC, because basically, if you can launch a film and get $80 million in the theater and $60 million on streaming, and you have to pay in the theater all these other distribution costs and everything, it's not necessarily going to mean that people are going to do it less and less. It was a big deal. People were watching very carefully, and probably will start to see other streaming services do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because HBO Max, I'm curious what the numbers are for Space Jam, because Space Jam came out this weekend, but you don't have to pay extra to watch Space Jam on HBO Max, right?
$29, once again, $29, count them. That's a lot of money for one person to sit and watch a Marvel movie that they didn't understand. But
well, yeah, but we had to do the same thing for Cruella.
Well, but that was Cruella. And I have strong feelings about Cruella.
And I have strong feelings about Marvel.
I know, and I understand that. And I appreciate that and respect that. But I didn't make you pay $29 to watch Cruella.
Yes, you did.
How?
I had to pay $29 to watch Cruella.
Oh, I didn't. Why did you?
Because I watched it on Disney. I don't know how you avoided that.
I don't know how I did.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You should go check your Visa statement or your credit card statement.
Oh, you know what?
You probably were charged.
It's too upsetting. I can't. But all right. But here's what we got to end with. Scarlett Johansson describes the film as its own genre. Think about that. And even named, get this, she named three films that she felt influenced her along the way of movies. One was The Fugitive from 1993.
Love it.
One was Terminator 2 Judgment Day from 91.
Awesome.
Okay. And one was Logan from 2017. Mm. And this. And so, I mean, I never thought of Scarlett Johansson as having the kind of depth that would even pay attention to that. But I loved the insertion of The Fugitive in 93, which, by the way, was huge, huge.
I think these Marvel movies are their own genre.
Yeah.
And they all bring something different based on their characters, right? And what they do such a great job of is building up these characters so that you do love them. And if you want to go on a hell of a journey, you know, they're off into phase, I think, 4 of the Marvel universe now. And we can talk about, we won't, but we can talk about Loki, and we can talk about WandaVision, and we can talk about Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is the launch into streaming, which they've got quite a handful of Emmys
right
waiting for them, Emmy nominations. They're doing something really interesting with these characters that is bringing them into a universal understanding. And I think if you're not paying attention to this, and I understand that there's that high level, you know, Scorsese made a comment about these movies, and all the filmmakers are kind of getting their digs in on these Marvel movies, but they're speaking to people. People are showing up to see these movies, and the box office speaks. And I agree that I'd love to see a lot more original films, but I think what they're doing with these is really interesting. And I think that they're willing to take these risks. WandaVision is a show about grief. Falcon and Winter Soldier talks so much about racism. It's a fascinating dive. They're doing something different now, and I think it's worth paying attention to.
Well, you know what, Wilder? You sold me. I think you're going to sell anybody listening to this. I wish I had talked to you before I watched it. I think I would have watched it with a different lens. And what I'm going to commit to you is this. I'm going to watch at least the first hour of it again, having had this conversation with you. I can't thank you enough, actually. I really
hey,
feel like, yeah.
Look at that.
I know. And it's very rare that I want to say that to you when we don't agree.
Don't worry. My check is in the mail from Disney.
Okay, there you go. All right. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.